Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
We're back. We were gone for a while.
Were we gone? I feel like I've always been here.
Okay.
It's been a long week. Wait, it's Tuesday? What?
yeah. So what happened is I went to the mountains. I went to Yosemite and Lake Tahoe. And from those places, I did the Six Colors magazine for March. So people got that, hopefully, and saw that, and had a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff about Apple events, because it was right before the Apple event, and a little bit about where I grew up.
If you haven't gotten it yet, you know, check your mailbox.
Ask your mailman.
Your physical mailbox, yeah, yep. Make sure.
Ask the sort of letter carrier. You may not, mine is a mailman, but there are many different kinds of letter carriers
out there. Your trans-dimensional deliverer.
Indeed, trans-dimensional delivery man might come through their delivery professional might come through a portal.
It happens.
It could happen. Have you listened to Hello from the Magic Tavern?
I have listened to a lot of Hello from the Magic Tavern. Because the second part of what you didn't say in terms of what happened was I was temporarily struck down by a medical issue, which basically was eye-related, and so I couldn't really read things, type things, etc. So I listened to a lot of Hello from the Magic Tavern because I could lie in bed and with my eyes closed and listen to a podcast.
So there was an Apple event and there was a lot of stuff going on. I appeared on about 8 other podcasts last week. I lost my voice at one point. That was really awesome.
Nice. I think found it again though. So that's great.
I did. It was right where I left it.
It's always the last place to look.
I still have a sore throat, but it gets worse when you talk to John Gruber for 2 hours straight. It gets worse. I did like 5 hours of podcasting on Friday, and at the end of it, I was kind of totally toast. Yeah, so that was all happening. You had your eye problem about that, so we didn't do a podcast last week, even though that was the plan. But we're here now. And for those who don't know what we just said, Hello from the Magic Tavern is a really nice, fun podcast. It's a bunch of improv people from Chicago, and it's an improvised podcast where they sort of build the world as they go. It's one of those podcasts that you can actually and should start from the beginning, not only because from the beginning their production values are really high. It sounds very good.
It sounds great.
But also since it's improv, but they keep doing episodes every week. So whenever somebody improvises something about
becomes,
this world,
it becomes canon.
It becomes canon. And then they have to deal with the fact that that is part of the canon. And it's hilarious. So
I was super glad that in a recent episode I listened to, they read an email from someone which caught them on a mistake, and they, you know, obviously just improvised the answer to that on the spot. But I was really glad because I had noticed that having consumed them in short order. Mm-hmm. Like, wait, they say in this episode these things don't exist, and then later on they say they do exist.
Oh, is this about
it's about the Robins?
The Robins, yeah.
Yeah. I caught it at the time. I was like, whoa, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I also noticed, there's a funny moment where a character says that I'm writing this in ink that only, I think it's only Unix can read, and then one of the characters looks over his shoulder and reads something later, and the other character calls him on it. It's like, wait, how can you see that? And again, these are improv people. They're so sharp that immediately the response is, oh, I didn't write that in the special ink. I wrote that in this other ink. I'm like, oh, thank goodness.
It is. We should mention it is an adults-only podcast.
Yeah, it's not appropriate.
Not, in fact, not appropriate
for
children.
The episode I just listened to, there's a letter from a 12-year-old who says that she and her little sister listened to it, and I thought, and they said, that's not appropriate. And then they proceeded to answer the letter. Yeah, not appropriate. Not
so much. Child death in food.
And there's a lot of child death. Anyway, so there's a podcast recommendation for you since you mentioned the trans dimensional delivery man.
Yes.
He's a character in the show. Anyway, hey, I got an iPhone SE and a 9.7-inch iPad Pro in the house. Right
is
now.
The iPhone SE as special as one would hope? Is it truly a special edition?
Well, what makes it special, Dan, is that it is not an iPhone 6 or a 6S or a 6S Plus or 6 Plus. It is in the if it was the Wonder Twins, it would be form of iPhone 5S, power of iPhone 6S, because that's really what it is. It's a it's a dead ringer. I mean, it's funny. All the rumors about the iPhone SE were originally you know, Mark Gurman's original report a couple of months ago was that it was going to be like a hybrid of the 5 design and the 6 design. It was going to have curved glass on top and stuff like that. And, you know, that was obviously something that was being considered, because he doesn't make things up. He has good sources. It's just that sometimes the rumors don't turn out to be... They're true at the time, and if you judge them based on what ends up coming up, you'll find them to be faulty. And that's the important thing to remember about rumors, is even if somebody's got great sources, it doesn't mean that everything that they report will come true, because they may be considering other options. They may go with a different option. They may change course somewhere in the process. And that clearly happened here, because
as the man once said, it's true. From a certain point of view.
Point of view. It's not, yes, as someone else once said, it's not a lie if you believe it's true.
agree to disagree.
You don't want to agree with George Costanza? That's probably wise. So, it's a dead ringer for the 5S. It's quite remarkable. I took the 5S down there for the briefing, and it's hilarious, because the Sherlock Holmes will... will be able to say on a future episode of perhaps Elementary, right? Johnny Lee Miller will say, I know you say that you haven't been able to buy a phone in several years, but I see by the chamfered edges on your so-called iPhone 5S that are a matte color, that unless you've been rubbing your chamfers in wax to dull them, that, sir, is an iPhone SE.
Well, it makes sense too, right? Because until very late in the process, the much rumored name for it was the 5SE.
Yeah.
And so it makes perfect sense that it would look essentially like a 5 or 5S. But I understand also why they decided not to call it that, because when you're on the 6 and probably soon to go 7, to the 7, yeah. 5 starts to sound pretty old.
Yeah. Yeah. I think getting off a number was key, right? Because this is not a... It's not a 5 in terms of the class of it, only in terms of the look of it. And while we, you know, it's definitely the 5 styling, and it's part of the, you could argue in some ways it's part of the 5 family, in some ways it's part of the 6 family, that it's not the point, right? Unhitching, I think what they have to do, right? This is them unhitching that price point from the 2-year-old phone, because they can't do that anymore, because they're going to run out of 4-inch phones.
Yeah.
And then it'll all be the bigger phones, and they don't want to do that. They want to have that 4-inch phone in the product line. It's funny, like a year ago I had like several weeks of arguments with people on Twitter and in discussions in podcasts about that Apple should do an update to the 4-inch phone. And I've been meaning to go back and find those, just because I felt like I was sort of shouting into the void there, but here we are. They've done it, and by unhitching it from a number, they can just keep it there. And in 2 years, they can update it again if they want to, either with the same look and feel or with a modified look and feel, but have it be modern on the inside, and then that'll work.
And the unhitching it from a number thing is interesting, because I know we've talked about naming stuff in some prior episodes. And it makes me wonder if it opens the door for them to eventually decouple the iPhone from a number. I know I feel like we possibly disagreed upon this in the past, but I do think it gets unwieldy, right? Like, depending on how long the iPhone keeps going, the iPhone 15 or iPhone 27 starts to sound pretty silly. So taking a cue from the line of, you know, the iPads, which we'll also talk about, I'm sure, having an iPhone Pro and an iPhone SE or something might make a lot more sense. You could even have an iPhone Pro Plus, as dumb as that sounds, because I still think 6S Plus sounds pretty dumb. Mm-hmm. But it seems like at a certain point, if you sort of have two tiers of iPhone, that it will make a lot more sense.
I wonder sometimes if what they're going to end up going for, it depends on what they keep in the product line, right? The problem is if they keep last year's model around to make it cheaper, then you kind of need to differentiate between them, which is, this is what they just did with the iPad, right? The iPad is now at least it's in the process of being uncoupled from numbers, and it's just iPad Pro based on size. They will replace those models with new models. They're not going to keep the old models around. I feel, very confident about that when they next update the 12.9-inch iPad Pro,
it won't be the iPad Pro 2.
It will be the new 12.9-inch iPad Pro, and that's it. It's just like you replace the 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro with a new model, and you just walk away. So if they did that with this, I don't know what they have to change the composition of their product line, but I do think it's way cleaner to say we have the iPhone SE, we have the iPhone, and we have the iPhone Pro, or something like that,
or iPhone Plus,
depending on how you want to do it.
No, I agree.
And the, you know, there's the, we got the big one. We've got the smaller one, and we've got the tiny one.
And frankly, yeah, exactly. Exactly what you can do is essentially, you could delineate it in theory by years too, right? Like, you don't have to call that part of the product name, but when you go and look up your Mac, MacBook Pro late 2014 or something, right?
Exactly.
So they could say, iPhone Pro 2016 or something.
Yeah, I'm using the Retina 5K iMac late 2014, right? Because now there's a 2015 model, but this is the 2014 model. And from that, you can say, oh, well, that's the one that was the first model. That one doesn't have the color gamut that the second one does. And you can do all that for, like, model year. But in terms of, like, identifying, right, like, the when you buy a new car, there is a model year attached to it, but you don't say I'm buying. I was on a podcast where we talked about this. I'm not sure if it was this one, but it was the, I think it was when I was talking to Syracusa. It's like, I have the Honda Civic hybrid from 2005, right? But what I would never say, and they would never brand it as like the fifth generation Honda Civic.
Right,
it is,
right.
If you look it up, like it's the fifth body model or whatever, sixth generation.
They sometimes do say things, they won't say numbers, but they'll say like the next generation, right? Like, you know, generation is a concept.
Sure.
It's not a marketing concept.
Right. Car people will know that. But ultimately, in the end, you're just buying a Honda Civic and it's whatever Honda Civic. The challenge is that, except when they're shifting model years, it's not like they keep last year's model around or the last generation around for cheaper on the lot. Mm-hmm. They don't do that, and that's one of the quirks of the way Apple has done this.
Well,
but I feel like they're headed down a path to simplify, and it really is to simplify the product line and the understanding of the product line by creating a bunch of slots and saying these are the slots and they have these names and the products go in the slots, and we'll change the products that are in the slots, but we're not going to keep incrementing the counter. We're just going to say, this is iPhone Pro, this is iPhone Plus, this is iPhone SE, and we're done.
Which is great, because comparatively, I mean, if you look back either at the history of the Mac in those dark eras in late 80s, early 90s, or at some other commoditized electronics, for example, and maybe I should play a little fanfare here, because I may have mentioned this in the past. I convinced my father to buy an HDTV this weekend, finally.
Bravo.
Like, I literally stood over him while he clicked the button.
Do it.
But like, you look at the listings of those things, and the model numbers on TVs are insane. Like, so making sure you get the right one, you know, I was like going back and forth with the Wirecutter review and like checking, all right, it's this one, you know, with this like 8-digit model string, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's way more maddening, like, because they don't simply release, they release so many TVs. Or if you're, you know, Samsung, so many smartphones or whatever that have in a year. So there are just no good ways to identify it. So, I mean, Apple has the virtue, and always has, to, at least in recent years, of having very simplified product lines. And so that's a big boon for it. But I think they'd still, in some ways, like to escape that, for the confusion that there still exists, especially in the iPhone, and less so now on the iPad product line, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. We're in a moment of transition for this stuff, but the iPhone SE is definitely a signal, and the 9.7-inch iPad Pro is a signal. I will say, it's like more evidence, right? We're building this case that Apple is trying to change how it does product naming, and now we've got a lot of evidence. It's not all there, and we still have to speculate, but there's a lot of evidence they're going in that direction.
Well, the same thing with macOS, which we've talked about as well.
Yeah, right. Like, there's evidence that they're going to simplify the OS naming and unify it, but we don't have proof. We just have evidence. Sherlock Holmes, I'm sure, is on the case there, too. But you, sir, referred to this as macOS, even though it's legally named. Well, that would be a really boring show, but sure, it's the Sherlock Holmes Apple mysteries. So here's my problem with this. I've been fortunate enough that yesterday I went and I got an Apple briefing, and I got these new products. So I got them a few days ahead of the ship date. And so, you know, of course, that I'm going to review them for six colors. This is part of the deal. And that's great. I look forward to those. Sometimes I write reviews for Macworld, but Susie from Macworld was actually there, and I saw her and Dan Frakes from The Wirecutter, and we were like, hey, we all used to work at Macworld, and one of us still does. But she's going to write those reviews for Macworld, so I'm going to write them for Six Colors, which is great. I like that. But it's a challenge because... I mean, it's. I feel like I came home yesterday and I got them out and I was using the products and I was thinking, I feel like I grew a few sizes because really it's like mostly not new technology. It's right. Just in smaller packages, and it's a challenge because it's like, you know, the iPhone SE is just a mix and match of it's nothing new. It's just newly assembled. And the iPad Pro's got a couple of new things, the 9.7 inch, but it's also a bunch of stuff that we've already seen before. So these are challenging products to review because they're not,
it's all a very new, qualitative new. Difference, right? Like, you know, because it's about stuff like the form factor, it's really much more about how it fits into your life than it is about the feeds and speeds, as they call them.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I'm saying to all the listeners out there is these reviews are going to probably be weird. I keep thinking these reviews are just going to be weird. Hey, my phone is ringing.
Yeah. Mine did that earlier.
It's sweet. I still have a landline because Comcast makes me, but I made the mistake of bringing I did a radio interview about the Apple FBI case yesterday. And so I brought the handset for the landline out here because they insisted that
I'm doing an interview on that, the radio interview on that later today.
Nice.
Coincidence.
Yeah. We do a lot of talking these days. So, anyway, so the reviews may be weird is what I'm saying, because these products are not your usual, let me tell you all the new things about them. It's more like, I think they'll be a little more philosophical. I started down this path. One of the nice things about writing a Six Colors review, especially writing something that's not on an embargo, is I'm not breaking the news. Instead, it's a little bit more like I'm writing it's like a think piece about the product,
right?
With details about the product, and that's a different kind of story than a down to business 2000 words, how is this product, you know, who should buy it. It's a little bit broader than that, and those are fun to write, but they're harder to write in the sense that you've got to figure out what the arc of the story is. And with these two products, I definitely feel I feel that's the only way to write something interesting about these products, frankly, is to write about what they mean and not what they are,
right,
so
yeah.
much.
Well, I mean, so, you know, you've been using the 9.7 inch iPad Pro for a little bit.
Yep.
Do you, and you are a 12 inch iPad Pro user.
12.9, Dan.
Yeah.
Don't short me. Don't short me.
You want me to round up? 13 inch
Thank
iPad
you.
Pro user.
Better.
It'd
be so
found...
much easier if we could call these the 10 and 13.
Yeah.
So much easier. I guess we could. We're not
give
Apple.
It a little bit more screen size. It's like 0.3 inches more.
Yeah.
We're all set. Have you found reasons that make the 9.7 inch more compelling to you than the 12.9? Or are you feeling like, well, this is just the same experience shrunk down. Why would I switch from a Pro?
In fact, I think it's not the same experience shrunk down. I think that's one of the things about it is it's fundamentally the 10-inch iPad. It's the same size as the iPad's ever been. So a lot of the things that are very different about the 13-inch, we'll call it, iPad Pro, are not on this product. I mean, it's an iPad Pro because of the pencil and the smart connector and the specs, but not, I mean, like the iPad Pro, it's got that full size keyboard on screen. This doesn't have that. There's no room for that. It doesn't use the, you know, there's a new layout for app developers to follow for iPad Pro support. And if an app hasn't been updated to support that, it just takes the old layout and scales it up, and everything gets fuzzy and it uses the old keyboard. Sort of like when you switch from the iPhone 5 to the iPhone 6 or the iPhone 4S to the iPhone 5, you get this compatibility mode that's kind of fuzzy and weird. Well, you know, this is just an iPad. It doesn't have any of that. It doesn't have the pixels that the 13 inch has. So it's compatible with everything, but it's using what I now consider kind of the old iPad keyboard because it's the smaller one that fits on the smaller iPad. So for me, the experience was very much like going back to an iPad Air. It doesn't feel like an iPad Pro as I've come to define that experience at all, because a lot of the stuff that makes the iPad Pro 12.9 feel really different don't fit. You know, so and Apple could have totally could have called this, if they weren't doing the naming thing, this would be the iPad Air 3. That would be what it would be. But they've decided now to change direction and call this an iPad Pro. And it has things in common, but it also has some things that are not in common. So, yeah, it's more like a throwback. All summer I was using the iPad, actually up until from WWDC all the way through the shipping of the iPad Pro. I used an iPad Air 2. I bought one specifically to try out the split screen and stuff same like here. That. And so this is like going back to that, except the difference is that it's faster and it's got True Tone and it's got that smart keyboard and it's got the pencil support. But it feels like, you know, it's an iPad through and through, iPad Air, now we would say, through and through. And I think that's an asset, not a disadvantage. I mean, if you're coming from the big iPad Pro, it's a different feel. But for most people, that's the iPad. That's what the iPad is. And so this is that. It's not going to feel any different to them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I have an iPad Air 2 as well. And I've been using 9.7-inch iPads aside from I briefly used a mini for a few years, which I quite liked. And was kind of a little worried about going up to the back to the 9.7-inch size because I thought I might find it too large. And it's fine. I actually quite like the Air 2. It's a great looking machine. It's super powerful still, which is one reason I think that it's still on sale because it's a perfectly great machine, even with the 9.7-inch iPad Pro as a competitor in the same, you know, form factor. I've always, you know, despite all the talk over the 13-inch iPad Pro, it's never really been something that appealed to me that much, if only because I felt like it encroached more on my MacBook Air area at that point. And I love my MacBook Air, and I just don't feel like that's a size that adds something to my experience. But I mean, that said, I can understand the appeal of it and part of the reason that it's been so successful and that it has all those Pro features and, you know, the larger screen size makes it something more comfortable to do, you know, for example, multitasking on, which has been a big improvement in iOS over the last year or so.
Yeah, and that's why I'm not going to go back. I love the big screen size. It is more of a handful. There's no doubt about it. It's big. It's not as easy to hold, especially in one hand. It's not really comfortable to hold that way. And it's not a mainstream kind of thing. But for me, it has kind of replaced almost all the uses of my MacBook Air, and I'm okay with that. I'm happy about that. But it's you know, this is a much more mainstream product. This is the best selling iPad, right? This is going to be the iPad model that sells the most in the next year, I think, clearly. And although it's more expensive than the iPad Air 2, was even before they cut the price and brought this out, you're getting a lot with it. And I think if iPad sales are what they are, because in part people keep their iPads forever,
right,
maybe making them more powerful and more expensive and then you keep them longer is fine for Apple to do that. And,
sure.
And then they'll have the less powerful ones that you'll get for cheaper.
It's becoming more like a Mac in that way, right? We don't replace our Macs every year, most of us. And, you know, we try to get longevity out of them. I'm on a 2011 iMac here. You know, it still works pretty well. So I think, you know, coming to grips with the fact that the refresh cycle on that is not like a phone, even where you're replacing it every couple of years, is a smart move. You know, why not make it more powerful and make it last longer? Apple products, that was at some point, you know, kind of the complaint about Apple in the height of the, you know, new iPhones and new iPads being released, was constantly something gets released and it makes the old thing obsolete. So if you can get away from that cycle, I think that's a strong argument for investing in one of these products. You know, no better example, of course, as we talked about, I think, in a previous episode, the third generation and fourth generation iPads, which were released 6 months from each other. And essentially, the third generation iPad was just a kind of a kludgy iPad 2. And it wasn't really till the fourth generation one that they ended up with a, you know, a Retina screen that didn't get super hot and chew through the battery life. And so a lot of people, I think rightfully, were kind of annoyed about that why did you refresh this product so quickly? And so having something that is a little more measured and doesn't, and the curve has flattened a bit, right? I mean, the iPad has been around for 6 years now, and the curve in terms of how much more stuff you're going to pack into that is not, you know, not exactly plateauing, but it's certainly, it's not as sharp as it was at the outset. So I think that, you know, while we're still seeing improvements in the iPad line, they're not going to be as drastic as they were 5 years ago.
I think that's true.
So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Have you, briefly, I mean, you know, the sort of the biggest new thing on there is the True Tone display, probably.
Yeah.
What is your experience with that been? Because I'm very curious, like, they explained it in a way on stage that I understand exactly what they're saying. I can't tell if that's something that either A, I would notice, and B, if I did notice, if I would find it a positive or a detraction.
I think some people will probably be bugged by it, but I think most people will like it if they even notice it. You have to turn it on. It actually, on the setup, it says, do you want to turn this on? Here's what it does. And you can turn it off. But, you know, white point. Okay. So color is funny. I'm partially colorblind, I can still see colors. I know what colors are. There's a few of them that I'm not as good at. I can see green and red. There's some greens that you would say, well, this green is different from this green. And I'd be like, nope, it's not. I'll take your word for it. So, there is no such thing as white. Right? Sorry, did I just blow your mind? Are we in the Matrix
Whoa!
Now? The way that it works is the white, there are lots of things that you can see as white. And your brain actually does a thing called a white balance. If you've ever taken a picture with a camera and had it turn out like super yellow and you thought, that's weird, that didn't look yellow when I took the picture, that's because of this phenomenon called white balance, which is you set a white point and your brain or your digital camera knows that that's white and that all the other colors kind of should be rendered from there. And I'm grossly simplifying this, but basically there are different tones of white based on the different kinds of light that you do. So if you have a warmer light, like an incandescent, it's going to be pretty yellowy. A fluorescent light is going to be more bluey. Apple has set its devices to a particular color temperature, which means what color is white. And this causes a discontinuity if you're in a room that is, say, really yellow and your iPad is at this more blue white point, because the white on the screen is not the same as the white on the white walls or the white piece of paper next to you, which can be really weird. And, I mean, the way this works is that you could say, well, it's skewing the color and making it all yellowy. That's bad. But if you're in a room where, all the light is yellowy, your brain is resetting your color map and the white point, to be that shade of yellowy white is white. And the iPad then seems really blue and bright and weird. And so with True Tone, it is trying very hard. It's got two light sensors that used to be what they call one channel light sensors, which is they just like measure light and that's how they do the auto brightness. And now these are four channel light sensors. And so they are actually able to tell what color the light is in the environment. And then they adjust the white point to match it. And the idea there is that the white that you see on a white piece of paper laying on your coffee table in your incandescently lit living room at night is going to be very similar to the white on your iPad. And that's better because it's less sort of shocking and it feels more natural. And I think that's true. I think that's accurate. I don't think it's an exact match because the light sensor can only do so much, but I think it makes it a more pleasant experience. If you've ever opened your iPad in the evening with the lights low and been kind of shocked by the bright and blueness of the display, that becomes mitigated by this feature. It feels much more natural.
Well, how do you compare that to something? So iOS 9.3 obviously added Night Shift as well, which does something kind of similar. How do you compare those two things, and do they work together or are they mutually exclusive?
They can work together. Night Shift is available to everyone, and it has nothing to do with sensors. It's just shifting. It's just
based
shifting
on the time
everything
of day or
to be less blue. Yeah, right. Exactly right. And you can do it anytime. You can have it do it at night. And there's some research about whether that there's feeling that it's good for you in terms of your brain's production of melatonin and things like that. But Glenn Fleischman did a story at Macworld that he tried to find a lot of research to support that, and it sounds like the research isn't really that strong, and that's
more of just an experiential thing, whether you prefer it or not.
And if you believe it, I mean, that's the thing about the placebo effect. If you believe it, it may help, but it may not. The science is not definite that this will absolutely aid you in sleeping. And I think Glenn's story suggests that sometimes it's the brightness of your display that's going to be a bigger issue. Mm. And if you're using your iPad in night shift, but you've got the TV on, the TV's
you're not helping yourself.
It's not going to help. So, there are a lot of issues there, but they can work together. I would say that my feeling is like True Tone. For me, True Tone would eliminate my need for night shift on that product, because the way I use night shift now is more to alleviate this sort of shocking, really blue white light. Mm-hmm. Because my house does have incandescents. It is very yellow when it's dark and we just got the incandescents on. It's a very yellow lit house, and the white point of Apple displays is jarring. So I use night shift as like an alternative to True Tone, since on the devices that don't have True Tone, that's the way to get a less jarring color. In my house. And in fact, you could take night shift and slide it around and get something that matches sort of like how you feel your room color is, and then use it that way. And it's sort of it's a do-it-yourself True Tone.
Just that you lack the light sensors, essentially.
Well, and if you move from room to room, this is going to change. If you move into a room that's got a very different color temperature, True Tone will change the color on the fly to be that color temperature, which is pretty awesome.
Not hard to believe that this will make its way to pretty much at least the rest of the iPad line. Possibly the new iPhone.
Yeah. I think ultimately this is what Apple wants to do with its display tech, is it wants to make it all brighter, it wants to make it all less reflective, and it wants to make it feel more natural. And this is a way that they can differentiate from some other products by reading the room.
I haven't gotten to... Yeah, I've been using Night Shift since 9.3 arrived, and I really haven't quite come to terms with it. It still looks weird to me, and part of that is years upon years of being used to a certain white point on my monitors and various screens. So I haven't quite acclimated to that yet, but I'm gonna stick with it for a little while and see if it ends up making more of a difference for me. But I've heard a number of people who've said that they think it looks awful, and I can understand that. Well, because it is different. It's like when they they switched the scrolling direction on the Macs, and everyone freaked out.
Well, I think it's not for everybody, but I do think that there is an effect here where people are like, but wait, you're going away from what is actually real.
What is real?
But this is my point with True Tone is. It's not skewing. I mean, it's changing the colors on the display, but colors change in your environment. It's not, there's not like one true white that is the only white that you can see. It's just not true. There are color temperatures. And so it's adjusting the color temperature to match your environment. If you're somebody who's a design professional and you want the color to be locked to a very specific color temperature that you know, which is the standard Apple color temperature, well, you turn the feature off, and then you're done. Sure. But for most people, that's not the case. They don't care. They don't need to worry about it. But we'll get used to it. And the night shift, night shift is kind of like that too. I think you adapt and get used to it. But if you hate it, you can slide it back a long way. You can slide it all the way over to like max, but you can also back it off, and you can also just turn it off and not worry about it. And that's fine too. It's a nice option to have, because at night, most of us are in very kind of warmly lit spaces, and that blue is pretty shocking. Whether or not it has an effect on your sleep, it's a pretty shocking experience.
I get that.
So I guess I'm going to write a lot about that, because that is a new feature, and that gives me something to hold on to with the new 9.7-inch iPad Pro is that new feature.
Yeah, that's pretty
something.
Much it. And size, that's pretty
size.
Much
and is there something else? I don't know. I mean, they say that there's less glare. It's got a better color gamut on the display. They say that it's got the same anti-glare coating as all of their other kind of modern products, but they reduced the glare by changing some of the layers under the screen.
So, which is nice. I mean, that's one of the things that Amazon has traditionally hit them for via the Kindle, is you know, reflectivity of the display. And certainly anybody who's used a large slab of glass in any place with lights finds problems with it. So
it's still an issue. I mean,
glass reflects light. I mean, there's only so much you can do about it, probably.
Well, I mean, there's more to be done. There's more to be worked on. I think Apple's goal with something like the iPad is to make it as readable outside as the Kindle. Yeah. And they're working on it, right? It needs to be brighter, and it is brighter. It needs to be less reflective, and it is less reflective. But they still got a ways to go, and they may have to change their display technologies by the time they get to that point. I mean, I'm sure they're working on all sorts of things. But it just goes to show you that, you know, when Apple is building a product, I mean, I know we all roll our eyes and we say, oh, yes, Apple, they build the whole widget, you know, blah, 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 hardware, software integration, corner of what streets are they on? Liberal arts and technology. But the other corner is hardware and software. And okay, we can roll our eyes at all that. But this is one of those examples where it's like they're working on, they got a lot of fronts going on here. They got their processors group that's building these new processors, but they've got like this display group and
materials, all that stuff.
Yeah, the display group they're working really hard on obviously some of their goals are how do you make it brighter? How do you improve the color gamut? How do you make it less reflective? And even stuff they told me that it's actually a challenge for them to come up with that anti-glare coating that they put on these products because what is the material and how is it put on the glass? And these are hard problems because this is a piece of glass that people are constantly touching and in this case now rubbing the Apple Pencil on it. So you can't have a coating that wears off.
Right.
Or that would be really crappy, right?
Well, it's
so
like
there's a lot going on.
The attempts they've made over the years to make oleophobic coatings on iPhones, which have kind of mixed successes.
Yeah. I mean, better than it was, but it's not like the oil
but
just like
exactly.
Drips
off. Your fingers are always going to produce grease because you are a filthy human being. Not you in particular, just all of us. We're all filthy human beings who produce oils, right? So only so much you can do again to combat that. Unless you start coating your iPhone with stuff that like eats oils, and then I just get worried it might eat your fingers. So, you know, trade-offs.
It's like a horror movie.
It is this whole Apple products, just like a horror movie.
Yeah, so that's what I'm up to these days. Is I've got these things now, and so I feel like I'm trying to like drop into to six colors and post things here and there just to kind of like keep things rolling. But I'm also trying to use these products and figure out what I'm going to say about them. Also, it's Apple's 40th anniversary coming up, so I'm probably going to have to do something. I think Macworld wants me to write something for them about it, so I might do that. I don't know. There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on. And the real problem is the perfect time to post these stories would be Thursday morning because the products are available on Thursday, right?
Right.
I don't know how I'm writing these stories between now and Thursday. That's nuts. But we'll see. I mean, I've got all day today and I've got all day tomorrow. And yeah, we'll see. Like I said, they may be wacky or I may not do them both by then. I may pick one. And do one and let
buckle,
the other one
buckle down, Jason.
Yeah,
buckle
yes, down. Sir. Yes, sir. Right. One of the advantages of having the sore throat and not being able to talk so well is, talk less, write more, as they say.
Well, good luck to you, sir.
Thank you.
Godspeed.
Thank you. And good luck to you, too.
Sure. What am I doing?
In
I don't
general.
Even know. Okay, great.
Fortune favors the bold, Dan. And thanks to everybody out there for listening. It's almost April, which means that then we'll be doing an April issue of the Six Colors magazine. But we're not thinking about that yet because there's too much happening this week.
Ah! Too busy.
All right. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for listening to the Secret Subscriber Podcast. Thanks for being on the Secret Subscriber Podcast again, Dan.
Always a pleasure to be back, Jason.
Always a pleasure to be back.
I always, at the end, I go away and then I come back next time.
That's good.
This isn't hard.
It's a relief that you return every time. Is what you're
back
saying.
To the magical land of Foon I go.
Ah, indeed. Indeed. Say hi to the talking badger. Bye, everybody.
Bye.